Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome to what is the first episode of spring in Australia, but also the second episode of this season of Dish the Dirt. This week I speak to Alan from Botany, an online florist in Melbourne. But just before we get into that, I would love it if you could look in the show notes this week and find the link which will send you to the Listener's Choice Podcast Award. The podcast awards are on again this year, and it would be wonderful to have Dish the Dirt acknowledged by our wonderful listeners from all across the globe. So please take the time to do that. If you listen regularly or if you're just having a one-off listen, that would be wonderful too. Share it with your friends and family, just so that we can spread the word of our Australian flower farmers even further. That would be wonderful. So yes, I mentioned this week we're speaking to Alan from Botany. Botany is a sustainable online florist based in Melbourne. They take the traditional florist business model and give it a green overhaul by offering products that have been created from farm to door without any single-use plastics or unnecessary packaging. They create all of their beautiful arrangements using only locally grown and seasonal flowers and arrange them into glass vases that ensure your flowers arrive fresher and ready to enjoy. If you are as serious about sustainability as they are, then you will love sending flowers with Botany. This is a very insightful and wonderful episode into how to run a sustainable florist. Thank you, Alan, for jumping on and sharing everything with us, and let's get into it. So yeah, when you're ready, if you want to begin by telling me how you got into floristry.
Yes, so I got into floristry by accident, actually. I had left school to study illustration. That was my initial dream. So I went and did a TAFE course for that. And by the end of the course, I realized that I didn't want to do that full time. It was going to be commissioned work for the rest of my life, and I didn't want to live like that. So then I sort of worked part time for a bit, just, you know, doing odd jobs, until I saw an ad for a floristry apprenticeship. And I thought, well, it's creative. It's, you know, it's not a desk job. I'll give it a go. It's kind of similar to illustration, I guess, working with color and texture and all that kind of thing.
So
I just applied for that, and that led to an apprenticeship, a three-year apprenticeship, and that was like 14 years ago.
Oh wow.
So
yeah,
I didn't expect to like it as much as I do.
Okay,
but I'm so glad that I started it. So yeah, I worked for other people for most of that time. And 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, I started my own business.
Yeah,
I started Botany. Yeah.
Yeah, great. And did you find having that apprenticeship and kind of the experience that you've had previously, did that make you want to decide to structure your business how you have? Were there things that you saw that you were like, I'm never going to do that in my own business?
I guess you learn things along the way. Like, you know, each different person that I worked for, you know, you'd sort of see things that you like and things that you know, don't necessarily want for your own business. But for a long time, I didn't really think about opening my own business. So, yeah, I probably wasn't working for people and looking at it like that.
Okay.
It was probably... the push for opening Botany was more like I started reducing waste in my personal life, you know, as we all do at some point, or as we all should do at some point.
Yeah.
And yeah, eventually I looked at my full-time job and at floristry in the same way. And, you know, I was in the store one day and I just looked around and I thought, far out, there's so much waste. Like, you know, every market trip would be bags full of plastic from the flowers and then floral foam and all the green waste, which doesn't necessarily get composted. Yeah, and I just thought, God, there's got to be a better way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I thought about, after that, I thought about starting my own business.
Okay, and so you started Botany, and tell me a little bit about your business and your ethos behind it.
Yes, so it was a bit of a personal challenge for me. I wanted to do a low-waste florist. I won't say no waste because I think that's an impossible achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I kind of wanted to see how far you could push it. You know, a lot of florists do support locally grown, but I kind of looked at all sides of the business and just thought, okay, what can I cut out, you know, and what can I do that's going to be as sustainable as possible, and is it going to be achievable? So I decided there's quite a few things that we do in the business. So I don't want to, probably the biggest challenge is that I don't ever buy anything that comes in a plastic sleeve.
Okay.
Which I'm sure other florists will know that's quite a challenge.
Yeah, that is such a challenge. How do you do that?
So I do a mix of buying. So I buy some things from the local wholesalers.
Okay.
And I also go direct to farms. So yeah. I do, you know what? I actually found it after I started, I actually found it easier than I thought it would be.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you just communicate with your farmers and even with your wholesalers that you don't want anything wrapped in plastic?
Well, I haven't been to a farmer that does it in plastic. Like, yeah, if I go direct, to be honest. Yeah. And I don't know if you found the same thing, but
yeah, they don't. Yeah.
I haven't found one that does. And the wholesalers, you'd be surprised if you challenge yourself, like, even for a week, just to be like, okay, we're not buying plastic this week. You'd be surprised how much you can actually buy.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. That was a big one. That was probably the biggest challenge that I wanted to see if it could still be done.
Yeah.
And then I only buy locally, as in Victorian grown.
Okay, yeah.
Or at a push, sometimes I'll buy Australian grown, but I'd say that's less than 5% of what I buy.
Okay. And why do you do that?
And that was another personal challenge.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah.
Also being in Melbourne, we're actually pretty lucky with the variety and the amount of locally grown flowers that we have access to. I think if, and especially being, you know, sort of in the more urban area, like closer to Melbourne, I think if I was regional or if I was, you know, more country or even in a different state, it might be more challenging to only buy flowers grown within that state.
Yeah.
But with Melbourne, we've got all four seasons. So we have, you know, we don't have just a set climate. Like, it's not only warm, it's not only cold. So there's so many things that our local farms can grow.
Yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah. So it's actually, I find it quite easy to just almost just buy Victorian grown.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
And then how do you find just these two things, like not buying in plastic and buying just Victorian grown? How do you find it for pricing? Do you think that you spend more on flowers sometimes? Because I know that some florists may justify, you know, not buying things in plastic because it's, you know, more expensive to buy the ones that are without, you know, like there might be that kind of thing. Sometimes people are just going for the bottom dollar rather than worrying about anything else? Do you find that it's more expensive? Or when you put in kind of your time and travel into going to farms, or not really?
Not so much. I'm not very picky with my buying. So there's things that I will use that I know in previous jobs that I've worked at, those florists would probably never buy because they personally don't like it. So because I've restricted it so much to Victorian and no plastic, you know, within that I'll just get whatever I can get my hands on. And, you know, after having so much experience in the industry, you just are confident that you can make it work. If I'm going, so most of the farms I go to are not too far away. If I am going to one that's further away, I will try and do a bulk buy and include things that I can dry, so it's okay. Worth the trip.
So
I kind of average it out that way. It's mostly just the Dandenong, Skisbon and to Lorelei. Probably the furthest, I reckon, Lorelei.
Yeah, or if you go to Soho sometimes, or maybe Lorelei's further than Soho.
They're really about 10 minutes from each other. Yeah. So, same.
Yeah, cool. So what else do you do within the business that, you know, what other ethos do you kind of run by?
Well, speaking of the dried, I dry all my own flowers. I don't use any of the imported preserved stuff, obviously, because it's bleached and it carries huge carbon miles and it's full of chemicals. I purchase all my own flowers and dry them myself, which has given me probably a greater range of dried flowers than you can purchase at the market, I'd say, especially locally grown wise. It's interesting. I often have other florists asking if they can buy my dried flowers. I think because there's a market there, you know, people want locally grown dried. But if you need it for an event or if you need it for a wedding, you know, then obviously you don't have time to dry it yourself. So I think it's, you know, it would be something to look into for the growers. A little bit of a market there, yeah.
Even that kind of those seconds products that, you know, maybe aren't good enough to sell, they're great for drying. So
exactly. Or not even seconds, or they're just too open to sell. Then they're perfect for drying, you know, because you want to dry them once they're fully open. So I do that. I have, with my packaging, I decided it needed to be either compostable, recyclable, or reusable. So I only send things in glass vases. I don't do any of the wet packs. Even though we have compostable wet packs, I just think that too much energy has gone into making something that's still essentially single use. So it's an okay solution, but probably not the best solution for me. The dried flowers I package in brown paper and the fresh flowers I package in glass vases.
Yeah, wow. Awesome.
Yeah, and then my gift tags are compostable and they are printed on post-consumer recycled paper with vegetable inks.
Amazing.
Yes.
So 3 years in, how are you feeling about this? Do you feel like this is a business model that works? You know, are you able to make money from doing things this way? Have you found it easy?
Yes and no.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely able to make money. I opened during COVID, so that was just lucky timing for me. But in hindsight, it turned out to be perfect timing. You know, I didn't open a retail store. I only operate online and it's all delivery based. So during COVID, it was perfect timing. You know, everyone was sending each other flowers, and we were all lonely and stuck in the house. So definitely at the start, it was easy, but this year things are very different. It's you know, with interest rates going up and all that kind of thing, everybody's feeling the pinch. And I think all small business has probably had a noticeable drop in sales.
Which,
you know, you can still get through it. It's just, different to the first 2 years, that's for sure. And I also, the way that I operate, because I'm not set to shop hours, you know, I don't sort of have to be there at nine and be looking after a store and have those opening hours. I buy to order, so that helps.
Yeah, help fabulous.
Making money. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So do you do events at all?
No, I don't do events. I don't do weddings. The reason is in Melbourne we've got so many incredible weddings and events florists, like an oversupply, I'd say. Like there's so many amazing ones, and I just thought that side of floristry is very well catered. Whereas the delivery side, there's less options.
Yeah.
And in terms of sustainable options, there's almost nothing.
Yeah. So what does sustainability mean to you?
So sustainability for me is environmental sustainability. So looking after our environment, that's where our product comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yeah, that we should honour that and look after it and try not to do any more damage than's already been done.
Yeah.
Also social sustainability, you know, I think we should be offering fair workplaces with fair working conditions, fair wages, equality, you know, all that kind of thing as well. So it's not just about the environment. Sustainability covers everything.
Great. And with going back to kind of the locally grown and tying it into this podcast, I guess, when you first started out in your own business, how did you go about finding local flower farmers?
Oh, I used Instagram a lot, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really big help for finding local growers and small growers. So I think I would go down like hashtag rabbit holes to try and find them.
Yeah.
And then after a little bit, I had a few contact me as well, which was really good. But because a lot of our local farmers know each other, you know, once you found one, I could, because you can look at who people follow. So I would kind of go through who they were following and see if I could find other local farms. So yeah that was super helpful at the start. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. And with your local flower farmers, do you tend to choose people who are farming sustainably as well?
Yes. And do you know what? Most of the small scale farms are naturally just less inputs, no plastic, farming with the natural seasons. So, you know, in winter they grow winter varieties, in spring and summer they grow spring and summer varieties. So yeah, a lot of the smaller scale farms just naturally do that from what I found. Which is amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely exactly. Amazing.
And being seasonal is obviously quite important to you. How do you show this in your online store? How do you tell people about you being sustainable and using local and seasonal flowers?
So the first thing you see when the homepage opens up is a big photo of flowers from the current season, and then it will say winter flowers, you know, shop now, or summer flowers, shop now. And then I update the images with each season.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, all of the products get changed over every 3 months, just to show what sorts of things are going to be around for that coming season.
Yeah. And I just have to touch quickly on your delivery. How do you, through having a delivery, obviously you're using a car. Yes. Do you use any carbon, like do you carbon offset? How do you sort of, if you're trying to be quite sustainable, I know that you're not doing, you did say at the beginning, you know, you're not 100%, but is there something that you do to kind of offset that?
Yes. So I donate $1 from every delivery to Greenfleet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Greenfleet, a lot of people know them, but if you don't know them, they plant native and biodiverse forests, and they legally protect them for 100 years, and they help sequester carbon and provide habitat for native animals.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, they're a great company. Yeah, so great. I do that. Yeah.
And you're a part of the Sustainable Flower Network. Are you an ambassador? Yeah, wonderful.
Yes.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about that and how you became an ambassador?
Yeah, that was amazing, actually. I was really thrilled about that. I already knew about Rita Feldman, who is heading it up, and was already following the Sustainable Floristry Network. Love everything that she does. You know, it's big, big inspiration for me.
Okay.
And she contacted me out of the blue and she said, you know, I love what you're doing. Would you be interested in being an ambassador? And obviously, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely was. So the Sustainable Floristry Network is about to launch a professional development course, which is based on the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Mm. So that's for people who are already florists. It's not a floristry course, like as in learning how to do flowers. It's a course for florists to learn how to make your business more sustainable, which would be amazing. Yeah, so that's launching very soon.
Yeah.
Don't know the exact date, but yeah, hopefully this year.
I think sometime in the next month or so.
It's very close. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work though. So being an ambassador, what does that mean for you? Like what's your role in that? Is it just that you have a business that can show that it works, or do you do something within the network?
It's definitely a lead by example and a help to educate. Okay. So, you know, I within my socials and on the website, I talk a lot about sustainable floristry, how I do things. You know, I'm always open for any questions. If anybody wants to know, you know, do you have any local suppliers or how can I do this differently? You know, so yeah, lots of education and help and yeah, just showing how things can be done differently through your own business.
Yeah. And in that, what attitudes do you think need to change in the floristry industry for, you know, florists to be able to take on these sustainable practices?
There definitely has to be, I think, an interest or a want to improve your business. I know probably not everybody is interested in becoming sustainable, but if you are, I think it's important. You know, it's the way a lot of industries are going, and the floral industry has probably been flying under the radar on it a little bit, just because we work with a natural product. It seems like an industry that should be sustainable naturally. You know, our product is a bit, well, I think the view is that flowers are naturally locally grown, they're compostable, so, you know, how can it not be sustainable?
Yeah.
So I think for the general public, our industry is probably not getting enough scrutiny because we do contribute a lot of waste. And if we're going to be a part of the solution for climate change, then we really need to make some changes.
Yeah. Exactly. So within that, how do you think that we can educate the public to care about where their flowers are coming from. I know, I feel like there's been a big push towards locally grown flowers, and that's amazing, but I feel like that's not the only thing that needs to change for us to become more sustainable, and for our industry to survive. So how do you personally think that we can change people, the consumers' attitudes towards, you know, flowers, buying flowers from Woolworths and plastic and all of that sort of thing? How do we educate them?
Yeah, it's definitely a good question. I think we need to, you know, focus on the beauty of locally grown, you know, share stories about local farmers, where your flowers come from, the benefits of buying locally grown, you know, things like reduction in carbon emissions, supporting the local industry so that it can grow instead of shrink. Because the more that we rely on the imports and the more that we support imports, you know, I think that's going to have a flow-on effect for our local farmers. So, yeah, just helping people to understand the impact that their purchase has. If they're buying flowers, you know, what is the difference between locally grown and imported, and why is it so important to support local?
And what would be your tip for a florist in their own business to try and push that onto consumers? Do you think just by telling them, by kind of sharing stories on social media, or do you think that they could be doing it in a different way?
No, I think both of those things are a good way. You know, social media, definitely. If you have a retail store, you know, chatting to customers, I find they're always interested to know where their flowers come from. You know, these are roses from Cranbourne, or, you know, natives from Sylvan, and they find it really fascinating. It's like if you go, you know, to a food market and the growers tell you where their farm's based and where they grow your fruit or where they grow your vegetables. You know, it's fascinating to have that visual image in your head. So, yeah, just talking about it and just exposing people to where their flowers come from. Yeah, in the same way as food is, I think it's really important.
Yeah.
You know, I work a second job on a Saturday, small biz life.
I
talk to customers in that job about it, and they're always interested. You know, they love to hear it. So I think don't be scared. You know, don't be scared about, and if you do have imports in your store, you know, differentiate, and then they can make the choice, and you can sort of see what they are really wanting to purchase.
Yeah, exactly. So what would be your top five tips for florists within their business to change to be more sustainable that are easily done?
Okay, number one, get rid of floral foam.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think that alone, like if we phased out the use of floral foam over 3-5 years, just that would be such a huge help to the environment. You know, it's a microplastic. We're tipping foam water down the sink. It's going straight to the waterways. It's that would be my biggest tip. If you can phase out floral foam in your business, that alone would make such a difference.
Yeah.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, reduce the use of plastic. I know that you can recycle the plastic sleeves now, which is amazing. Santo Spirito has just launched their recycling program.
Yeah, that's only in Victoria, isn't it?
That's only in Victoria, and that's only if you can get to Santo Spirito.
So,
if you're not near there and you don't have access to that, then just try and see if you can do even like a week or even one market trip without buying in
plastic.
I'm
going to try this.
You know what I mean?
I am a shopper.
How you go.
So, and I buy from very local farmers, but I also do buy from wholesalers and I do buy in plastic. So this is, you've inspired me. I'm going to change.
Well, some of the wholesalers are farmers as well. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, there's nothing wrong with buying from the wholesalers. It doesn't have to be 100% farms.
Yeah.
So, yes, so no fluorofoam, reduce the use of plastic. Take control of your waste. So think about getting a green waste bin for your store if you don't already have one. Mm-hmm. So you can separate green waste, plastic, recycling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three.
What do you do with your green waste?
I compost as much as I can, and then when the compost is full, I put it in the FOGO bin, the food organics, green organics bin.
Yeah.
So that it can, yeah, that it can get sort of composted or mulched at the local council. It's my dream to handle that waste myself. That's like my next major goal, is to get an industrial composting system and handle all the green waste on site. That would be, that would be,
yeah.
I would love it.
Have you ever thought about giving some of your green waste back to your farmers? I wonder if they'd ever do that, you know, because then they can compost it.
Yeah, sometimes I'll take cardboard to suppress the weeds. I think they can use that. Yeah, if there's cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
I have offered some compost and green waste around before, but because I buy mixed and because they're not sure where it comes from, they're a little hesitant to take it, especially the ones that are dealing with soil health.
Yeah.
They're a little, they're a little bit hesitant, which I understand, you know, you don't sort of know.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
What's going into your compost pile. So, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be great to have it all composted and turned into soil and then offer them that.
Yeah.
Like the end product. I think that would be more helpful. But yeah, I love that. That would completely close that loop.
Yeah, it would be so cool. Oh, so take control of your waste was your other one. And then any others that you think?
So I have another idea, but I think it's off track. Wait, are we talking about sustainability in general?
No, your top five, your top tips to kind of change your business that are easy done. You
know? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
From a sustainability viewpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. So. So the other thing that you can do is think about who you support through your business. So if you are stocking giftware, you could support businesses that are also sustainable, especially local small businesses or places that are already working low waste, you know, sort of rather than the big brands. Mm. I tend to do that. Even who I bank with, you know, I consider their impact. Who does my marketing, I consider their ethical and sustainable standpoint, you know. So any choice that you're making in your business, I think look at it with that same lens. And what's that? That's four.
Yeah,
I don't know about it. It's one off the top of my head.
It doesn't have to be five.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be. So
yeah,
all of these tips and kind of starting out your business like that, you said that this year has sort of been the hardest, but what has been, I don't know, your biggest achievement, do you think? I mean, this is all pretty incredible, but what for you, what would be the best thing that's happened since you've started?
Do you know what? For me, knowing me, I think just starting was my biggest achievement. I'm very risk averse. And small business is a very big risk, and I tend to not want to start anything until I know everything about it. Okay. So, you know, I did a business course, I did a marketing course. I, you know, tried to research as much as I could before I even attempted it. So, yeah, the fact that I left my job and started a small business was massive for me. So I'm very proud that I did it. And I'm very happy that it's working and that I could do it the way that I wanted without making any compromises. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah. So you haven't had to change anything that you sort of set out to do. You haven't, you know, had to compromise on anything.
Not yet. No. Okay. If there's anything that I want and it doesn't work, can't do it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very strict. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's been sort of the hardest part of starting a business like this? Because it's, to be honest, like everything that you do is very considered and it's, I would say it's not easy to run a business like this. So what's been the hardest?
The hardest, I think, is reaching people, reaching customers, especially as an online business. You don't have a storefront. You know, you don't have that physical exposure for people to find you. At the start, that was very easy. That sort of came without really needing to try. But, yeah, now it's, like I say, different year, different situation. Everybody's struggling and, yeah, it's been really hard, that marketing side of it, to try and reach not just customers but my customers, because I feel like my audience is quite niche and quite specific. I've done as much as I can so far and I've been building it. It's been growing. But it's gone to the point where I think my very, very minimal expertise in that area has run out. So, yeah, I'm about to work with a Melbourne-based marketing company to help me with that.
Because, yeah, amazing.
Oh, it's huge. You know, we're florists. We're not technical people. We don't know anything about SEO and online marketing. So, yeah, that's a huge challenge.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's important to know when to approach the experts and approach the professionals when you need help with something. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Because, like you said, in a small business, you kind of have to wear all the hats, but you don't actually necessarily know how to do all of those hats. You know, like
it's a lot of learning.
It's very hard. It is so hard. And people underestimate how hard all of those things put together are. You're not just making pretty flowers all the time. It's all the other business stuff that goes with it. So
it's a lot, and you can do it to a point, but there's definitely a limit to that multitasking.
So for the future, what do you think that we definitely need as an industry to focus on now? Because if we don't, you know, there could be serious consequences in the future. What would be the main one you would hope is the flower industry that we would action?
I think for individuals, you know, individual businesses or individual farms, I think it's important to remember that you can make a difference just in what you're doing. We can't keep thinking, oh, you know, someone's going to fix this, or it's up to someone else, you know, to help with climate change. I think don't underestimate how much difference you can have just as a small business or as an individual. I think just make as many changes as you can within your own business. And if we all do that, it'll be an industry-wide impact. You know, it's as easy as that. We've just got to do it.
Yeah.
We can't leave it up to anyone else anymore.
Yeah. And I just wanted to ask you, because you do buy locally grown and you buy from Victoria, if you wanted to, like, give a shout out to your farmers, like, do you mind sharing who you buy from, and because you're buying such amazing locally grown product, I just think, especially on this podcast, we're all about local flower farmers. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool. I mean, you've probably interviewed half of them already, I think.
Oh, that's okay.
In fact, I'm pretty sure you have. I always tag them on Instagram as well.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, cool.
Yeah, if I'm using their flowers. So the local farms are Florally Seasonal Flowers, who does dahlias mostly, but also a few other spring summer varieties. I use 302 flowers in Gisborne. They do heaps of beautiful natives and also lots of really interesting perennials. I use Bloom Into You, not super often because they're quite far away from me.
Yeah.
But I tend, when I shop with Bloom Into You, I tend to do a big buy. So they're really good for getting things that I can dry from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the wholesalers, you know, Santo Spirito, obviously growers as well. They've got a big farm in Torquay. So they do both. And then also Tulip Garden, who buy from a lot of local farms in that area. So
yeah.
And yeah, it's a bit of a mix.
Massive farm of their own. So that's good too.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what are your favorite tools to use in your floristry business?
Probably my snips, actually. I got this really great pair of snips that one of the girls I used to work with, Michelle, got me onto. I'm pretty sure, I've had them so long, I can't remember what they're made of, but I'm pretty sure they're carbon steel. They're indestructible. They're made in Japan. I've had them about 6 or 7 years.
Are they the ones that don't have a spring back on them, or do they have a spring on them? I've used these snips recently. Maybe they're not the same ones, but there's other snips that everyone seems to use, and they're made in Japan and they don't spring back, and I just find them so hard to use. Everyone's told me you need to get used to them, but I'm like, ouch.
They spring back. Do you mean after you've squeezed them, they automatically open?
Yeah,
they definitely spring back.
Okay.
I've never had to sharpen them, and they go through branches as well as they go through, you know, sort of thinner stems. I can use them on everything.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Awesome. They're from Jackson's Japanese Tools.
Okay.
They're a bit of an investment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 7 years in.
Yeah, amazing.
I don't think I'm ever going to have to replace them. They're so good.
And you haven't lost them. I lose my snips all the time.
No, because they were a little bit expensive. I'm very paranoid about losing them in the bin.
So if you had to leave quickly, what three things could you not do without, any flowers, any books, anything that you've really learned from?
Oh, I mean, I do have a really good stash of seeds.
Yeah, awesome. Do you grow any of your own things?
I grew some cosmos last year. It's the first year that I've had dirt.
Okay, cool.
I've always lived in an apartment. I've never had dirt. So I was pretty excited, and I bought a whole heap of seeds during lockdown, and I grew a few things. Cosmos were probably the most success I had.
Yeah.
It is not easy. I have so much respect for flower farmers after trying to grow my own flowers.
Oh yeah. I am always chucking out seeds onto everything and thinking, everyone always talks about the self-seeding thing, you know? Am I this never happens in my garden.
No,
ever.
It's not a thing.
Yeah, it's not a thing.
Well, then they'll sprout really easy. Like I find getting them to germinate is easy, and then I put them outside and they just get mowed by snails, and I don't know what to do anyway. So yeah, I'd take my little seed stash, I'd take my favorite snips, and I would probably take, I've got this book that I've loved for ages since I started my apprenticeship, actually. They stocked it in the shop that I did my apprenticeship at. It's called Velvet Pears.
Okay.
And it's about a garden in Tilba Tilba in New South Wales. And it's like a diary that the woman who built the garden wrote. And it's, you know, she sort of follows a year in the garden through the seasons. And it's just so beautiful. I love it. It's got recipes and, tips about what she grows and how she built the garden. It's, yeah, I love it. It's my favorite book.
I just wanted to touch on quickly before I let you go, the getting rid of floral foam in your business. Do you have any tips on how people could get rid of floral foam? Is there anything that you think people could be using? Did you research anywhere into floral mechanics, or did you find somewhere that had a course on that when you were training? Just in case anyone's really interested.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me it was definitely easier to start a business without floral foam. I appreciate that once it's quite ingrained into your daily workings that it is a little bit easier to remove. So I think give yourself a time frame, you know, rather than just saying, okay, we're suddenly going to remove floral foam and now we have to work it all out at once. You know, I think probably, you know, each week learn a different way to do things. So if you're using foam in your boxes, you know, perhaps for a week, focus on how you can remove it from your box arrangements. You know, either use a tub or maybe do vases. And then if you do weddings, maybe focus another week on, okay, how can we do our table centers without foam? Do we need to get some chicken wire, or do we need to invest in Kensans, or do we just need to use fresh water? So I think take it one step at a time, because it can be a little bit overwhelming, especially if you use it a lot in your business. And there's lots of resources online. There's lots of YouTube videos. Once the Sustainable Floristry Network launches, there'll be lots of info in there if you need any questions answered. So just take it step by step.
Yeah, awesome. Mm. Yeah, great advice. So is there anything I haven't asked you that you really wanted to share about your business or about the industry that you've learnt in the past? How long has it been? 18 years? Or how long have you been in for?
I don't know. 14.
Sorry, you did say that.
Anyway. I think you never stop learning. Like, you know, even since I've started the business, there's been a lot that I've learned. You know, if you're starting out as a florist, just keep practicing. You know, don't compare yourself to other florists, just keep at it. And if you are trying to become more sustainable, just do what you can at the moment and just keep improving. You know, there's always going to be new and better ways coming through that we can do things, you know. So even for me at the moment, the way I do things might not be the best way in 3 years or 5 years. So I think just keep learning, keep improving. It's a, you know, it's an ever-changing job. It's not just like you learn it and that's it. So stay curious.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And I personally think that you've got such an inspirational business, and everything that you're doing is something that everyone else could be doing. And all of your tips and advice that you've given, like, during this episode has been awesome. So thank you so much.
Once again, thank you, Ellen, for being part of Dish the Dirt. Go to the show notes and look up that link, and please vote for Dish the Dirt in this year's Listener's Choice Award for the podcast awards. It's such a mouthful to say, but I would love it if you could do that. Keep sharing all your stories. Please keep sending me those beautiful messages. So wonderful to hear from first-time listeners. Thank you, everyone, for sharing Dish the Dirt, being part of Dish the Dirt. It's always so wonderful. Keep being blooming fabulous.